in Kano District to build a completely different kind of response, which is, let's have community health workers help us find the patients. Let's have proper care for the patients, and let's find everything we can to get them better and prevent spread in that way. And that's what we should all be focused on right now. And there's, you know, there's no reason we can't stop this with the adequate investment in, again, staff, stuff, systems right now.
And the health workers on the front line in these countries now, what they're going through?
You know, I was in Connaught Hospital with colleagues of mine from a colleague of mine from England, from King's College, and you know, looking around the hospital, they're getting ready for to set up an Ebola ward.
This is in Sierra Leone.
This is in Sierra Leone. I'm just thinking, what a tragedy! What's about to happen to them? Because they just, you know, no wonder the health workers are frightened, right? They know they don't have the people know that they don't have the personal protective equipment that they need. They know that they don't have what it would take to, you know, treat people with dignity and compassion. And, you know, it's a very frightening thing. I've lived through, you know, situations like that. And, you know, the earthquake in Haiti, when you know you just don't have what you need to help people survive. And it's frightening, you know, and it's demoralizing.
That note, we want to say thank you so much to Dr. Paul Farmer, infectious disease doctor, medical anthropologist, founder of Partners in Health, professor at Harvard Medical School. This is Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Renee Fell, Sarah Mate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Apa, Fani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
And this is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves from Henry Ford College. And now it's time for our weekly public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. Thank you for being with us today. We are live from Henry Ford College, and Henry Ford College is now open 5 days a week, all offices. The fall semester starts next Thursday, August 28th. You need to be registered in some class, or you can't register in anything after next Thursday begins. So make your choices. Come on down, as they say. If you've already been here before, you can register online without making a trip in. But there's still a lot of great classes available. A lot of them are pretty well filled up. Remember, we have a new promise, and that is if it's in the schedule, it will run. So if you see it there, even if it might have only zero number of students in it, it doesn't matter. You will be the one that 'll make it run. Okay, so that's a whole new policy. If you see it in the schedule, especially at this point in time, don't worry about, oh, it's only got five people out of 12 or five out of 25 or something. Don't worry. It'll happen. Isn't that great? You don't have to be, if it's the right time and the right class for you, sign up now. Yeah. And Henry Ford Community College did not ask us to say that. Who are we? Well, my name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor here at WHFR.FM, and I'm joined on our weekly public affairs show, Local News and Alternative Views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. I'm joined by John Conroy, our WHFR news director. So welcome today, John.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's really good to be here.
Okay, I didn't hear that. Let's see what microphone. We're theoretically on number one, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't hear that at all.
Oh.
Okay. Might have you switching microphones. Take the next one there.
Okay.
Just bring it over.
Ah, ouch.
Oops. That hurts. Yeah. Okay. When we introduce people here, you know, we're only a non-commercial station, so we have to sometimes fix stuff on the air. Okay, John, let's see. Now do I hear you?
I'm on the air, Jay. I'm
no,
here.
You're not.
No.
Okay, something happened here. Take that one.
Okay.
And, that hurt.
Sorry.
Okay, I think I can hear you.
This is John Conroy.
Okay. Yes. I know what happened. Our microphones were moved around and plugged in to different inputs other than what I expected. So, okay, now we can be very professional here. Boy, oh boy. And tell you what's happening in the local area. Now, first of all, John has some cultural news. He did attend, and unfortunately, this is old news, folks. You can't be part of it. You can't think about it, except maybe understand what you've missed. John did attend The Good Doctor, the play here at Adria Auditorium yesterday. Last Sunday. And what was it like? How good was it?
Oh, it was highly entertaining. I enjoyed it very much. I got a chance to speak with Mary Bremer Beer, one of the directors of the show. And I also met her son, Chris, who was involved with playmaking and other various jobs as well.
Right, and he's directed for us as well as many other places in the area, too. So, yep, a lot of fun was had by all. We told you, folks, you should catch The Good Doctor. Coming up next in the area, you were telling me about Midsummer Night's Dream with the Players Guild of Dearborn. And he's grabbing the newspaper here, but that's really historic in a way. I think in their, how many years have they been doing Players Guild in Dearborn? They have their own theater, you know, folks, in West Dearborn, their own theater building, yeah. And 87 years, I think, they've been doing that.
I don't have it.
Okay, he doesn't have it. So I'll summarize, yes, I found it. It's in the Times Herald from Wednesday. It's their first Shakespearean play in their 87-year history. Oh my goodness! Sue Suchita writes a story about it, and of course it's one of Shakespeare's best known plays. It's been made into a movie in the middle 1930s. It had James Cagney in it and Mickey Rooney doing Shakespeare, Hollywood version. Okay, I mean it was a Hollywood cast like that will get people to see Shakespeare, you know. And it wasn't too bad. It was a little too silly, but nonetheless. But apparently. Director is Katie Suchita. Similar name to the reviewer, Sue Suchita. And so uniquely similar, I bet there's a relationship there. Daughter, maybe? Sister? Cousin? Whatever. Oh. So anyway, that story got in the paper for sure.
there also happens to be a Michael Suchita in the cast.
There you go. So it may be a family affair here. Sounds but nonetheless, like it is one of Shakespeare's great plays. It is a comedy. It's got a little bit of a play within a play, intricate plot. Separated human lovers are bewitched and then reunited, and a spell is cast on a fairy queen, causing her to fall in love with a donkey, temporarily. And, oops, spoilers, and a traveling troupe comically prepares a play for a royal wedding celebration. So if you haven't read it before, don't worry about it. This is going to be a lot of fun. Shakespeare's plays, as an English teacher for many years, myself, English literature teacher and composition, I have to tell you, it's one of the best play-going experiences of all of Shakespeare's plays, because there's a lot to watch, a lot going on, and it's a lot of fun, too. It's a comedy, mostly. So when is that coming up? Well, they're... let me see here. Others in the cast, you know, they don't give
say.
The dates.
No.
It says when the curtain rose on the comedy, Friday. Oh, maybe it's ongoing right now. But it's interesting, they don't say
the exact dates.
The exact dates. So go to, use your friendly computer search engine or call up information. They still give phone numbers from the phone company, maybe.
Sure.
What do you have to dial a special number though? I don't think it's zero. Is it 411 or something?
That is a 411 is a number to use with a cell phone.
I think so. So Players Guild of Dearborn, and so they did already start Midsummer Night's Dream. So I would guess it's definitely going to run at least through this coming weekend, and you might want to go see that with your family and friends. But we don't have any other information about prices or days because in the rush to press. It was left out of the the story in the Times Herald. I know. Call the Times Herald. What the heck? Call the Times Herald. Let them know you want to know, and tell them to get sharper on that in the future, because they're the ones that published it, for Pete's sake.
We do know it'll be at the Players Guild of Dearborn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in their own theater in West Dearborn. Yep. Mentioning Chris Bremer, he's holding auditions September 23rd and 25th, about a month from now, here at Henry Ford College for our spring musical, spring 2015 musical, Hairspray, which was made into a movie. It's been on Broadway for years, and that's a lot of fun, too, and that's singing and dancing as well as a little bit of a comedy plot. So that will be coming up next spring at the end of April and beginning of May here. So that's something to plan ahead for if you know anybody that wants to act and be part of that. And I believe all students involved in the theatrical productions here must be taking a class at Henry Ford College. But what a great way to learn theater. You don't have to be a theater major. You just take one particular class in the theater area. They'll tell you about it. You can go to theater, spelled T-R-E, theater, .hfcc.edu about the Hairspray auditions for next spring at Henry Ford College. Okay, so plays are fun. Plays are special and unique. They're not like movies.
No.
A lot of people don't understand. Well, it's just like a movie, right? You sit there and watch. Well, there's an interaction that goes on between the performers and the audience.
Definitely are engaged with the audience.
Even if they're not asking you questions as you're sitting there, you know, and Shakespeare actually wrote his plays that way, because the Globe Theatre in London, where they first performed these, you know, 1600s, early 1600s, they had some people that were right up next to the stage. That was the cheap seats, except there weren't any seats. You had to stand for the whole thing. And so this is sort of the rowdy, less educated class in England. I mean, the Queen, when she came, and she did support Shakespeare's Globe Theatre, she had a box up above in the back, you know, protected from the lower price seat people.
The riffraff.
Well, not necessarily riffraff, but they had to pay some money to get in. They couldn't be brought. But they needed to stay engaged and entertained, and so the players, and the playwright even, made sure that they had speeches and conversation directed right at those people up close. And so that's another theatrical trick, but you often feel that because there's, well, we might call them monologues, but where the actor is going to have a somewhat long speech, but they're directing it at the people in the audience. Think about this and what I'm thinking about. What would you do? It almost feels like. And that makes Shakespeare's plays very involving, even if you're just sitting in the audience watching. So, good for the Theater Guild. I have to do a little aside here, Players Guild of Dearborn, because they say that the play is overanalyzed in educational setting. I don't think so. I think you can get a lot out of great literature. It's not like experiencing the play, the moment of the play, the performance you can't duplicate on a piece of paper. And as a teacher of English literature, I've often told the students, we're reading it, but you got to be imagining what it looks like on stage to really appreciate it, or go see it.
Go see it.
And many teachers of theater, I know, we were reading Shakespeare in my junior high school and not understanding it well. But so our teacher, bus trip, they took us down to an afternoon matinee performance of a Shakespearean play. And it was, guess what, Midsummer Night's Dream. And the great comedian, this is in the middle of the 1950s, Bert Lahr was playing Bottom, which is the heavy-duty comic role in this play, and he was hilarious. Nobody thought that he could be in a Shakespearean play, but if you're a good comedian, you've got that sense of timing and even articulation and diction, and so he actually got somewhat of a second career developed, and this was as young kids, we couldn't believe, and it wasn't junior high school, I'm sorry, I guess I was 10 or 12, and what an experience. You said you had a play experience, too, when you were young.
Yeah, my mother took us to see Shakespeare one-act plays in Central Park. I grew up in the New York area.
Oh, Central Park, name dropper.
There we go.
And they're still known as having some of the best Shakespearean performances during the summer, but other kinds of things happen in Central Park too.
Yes, they do. But my sister and I got a chance to see that at a young age, and always, gained an appreciation of that kind of work. You know.
So that's why we highly recommend and support them here, because we've experienced them, and it's special, it's unique, it's something different too. It's not the same old thing. If you get tired of going to the same old movie theater and seeing the same old kind of Hollywood movies, you know, they might change the actors a little bit, but the volume and the flashy computer graphics everybody expects them now. They're not so spectacular. But if you want to see something really different, human interaction on the stage among these players, It's just great. And why is a play that's 400 years old being done today? Because it still has meaning and significance. It's still entertaining.
Still entertaining, yes.
Boy, yep.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Jay, did Burt Lahr, did he roar his parts?
He tried. Yeah, of course, he was known, he was in Wizard of Oz,
right.
as a lion as in a there, lion. Cowardly Lion. Yeah. And so that sort of introduced him to a different kind of comedy or a different kind of a performance. But he actually started touring, and he was in Shakespearean plays a lot in the 1950s. Let's look at the news of the week now here in Dearborn and the surrounding area. Obviously, we're still trying to get rid of the water in our basements or getting cleaned up. I was talking to, by the way, I want to commend our new WHFR program director, who's in charge of our programming as the top appointed officer here at WHFR, volunteer officer, but you know it's Joe Sullivan, the host of Big Band, Broadway and Beyond, that precedes this show on Fridays from 1 to 2. His show is from 10 to noon, right before Democracy Now, the national show that we run on Fridays. But he was telling me he lives in East Dearborn and he had 10 inches of water in his basement, and because of that, his water heater went out, his pilot light went out, and his heating and cooling are out. And he said he's made all the phone calls. I mean, he was busy. That's why he didn't come in last week. But he is busy making phone calls. Apparently, insurance, whatever insurance he had, will cover all the damage. But to get service people out, they're really busy.
Yeah.
He said his air conditioning and heating cooling system won't be repaired till next Tuesday. And the basement cleaning in that, the professionals that come in and steam clean and get rid of mold, mildew, all of that. When you have that much water, you got to have it professionally done. They're going to be later next week sometime. So I was driving through, and he lives in East Dearborn. I was driving through there, I think I mentioned last Friday, and a lot of homes have, I suppose, basement carpets and other types of things you would put in a basement sitting out front ready for pickup because they've been water damaged, water soaked. I asked him, there's a little correction here. Last Friday, I think I said on the air that maybe the combined sewer overflow project, which has been now changed to a repair of the aging sewer system in Dearborn at the same time, this was Mayor O'Reilly's idea, both to save money, because in the long run we'll need all the old sewer lines replaced as well as the overflow capacity. And I kind of cast the aspersion that maybe the city has only been working in West Dearborn, because I knew of that. Joe Sullivan told me this morning, because I asked him, he said, no, in the east side, there's been major streets that have been out of service for a long time, residential streets, and they've replaced sewer lines there too, probably as part of that. Of course, it has to be done. It's called infrastructure, folks. A lot of people had sewer backups because the sewer lines are old, and maybe they don't have the capacity they need anymore. Maybe they've been damaged over the years, you know, by root infestation, something like that. So it looks like the city has been doing, the city of Dearborn has been doing what it can to replace sewer lines, maybe as part of the overflow project, both on the east side and the west side. So they're not playing favorites, as I think I was questioning it anyway. I didn't say it for sure because I don't know much for sure. never believe anything I say on its own. You've got to check it out always. Even I don't get it right sometimes. And John, of course, all the opinions expressed on this show,
Now's the time to talk about that. Opinions expressed by our hosts on this show are not necessarily those of anyone else's at HFC. We want to encourage free will thinking and alternative views and bring them on the air.
Yep. And we thank Henry Ford College for allowing us to express these opinions, and they have not told us what to say, nor endorsed them necessarily. Next week, by the way, a little early promo since we mentioned the college here. The president of Henry Ford College, President Jensen, is going to be here for the first half hour. So that'll be a great show to tune in and find out what's been happening here at HFC. He's giving a big presentation to the college organization here on campus on Monday. And so he's getting his notes together for that, and I'm sure he'll bring the same ones with him. We'll have a lot to talk about the fall semester and this upcoming year, in fact, at Henry Ford College, with President Stan Jensen. Okay, looking at the papers, I didn't bring last Sunday's press and guide. I hope nothing happened last Sunday. But that's mainly because we get a little head start on the papers because we delve into things on the internet from pressandguide.com and other places. So very often the Sunday press and guide are things you've already heard on the show. Just another reason to listen or to check out our podcast every week from WHFR.FM. So I'm looking at Wednesday's press and guide, and the story from Ann Runkle, Digital First Media, talks about that a majority of area school districts rank average. And no school district in Dearborn or Dearborn Heights received an overall ranking higher than yellow on report cards released recently by the Michigan Department of Education, meaning that they met no higher than 70% of the state's objectives. Now, this is there's another story that I think is followed up in the Times Herald, but the other side of the story is that yellow is not bad at all. It you say, well, it's just average. Yeah, but look at what it means. What are the criteria that are being judged there? So the school district and the local board of education, they do want you to know that on many other criteria than what the state looks at for this yellow ranking. I mean, I like yellow. Yellow is for bananas, right? I like bananas. But it seems, the color of jealousy or something. I don't know what symbolically it means, but it's not the most fun of colors, unfortunately. The best color is green, and nobody got a green in the area. And it's interesting, the next one down is lime, and the third, again, average, is yellow. So it's interesting that lime is a little bit green, a little bit yellow. That's how they mix it together. And then there's orange in the middle, and then there's red. So notice that yellow and red makes orange.
Yeah.
That's kind of clever. I mean, Homeland Security never figured that out when they picked their colors, which we don't use anymore, by the way. But red is not good, less than 50% numbers, and Westwood got that. Westwood got Westwood District here. It's west of Telegraph, Dearborn Heights, south of Dearborn Heights. Anyway, and purple didn't have enough. The school did not have enough data, also called data, in order to be rated. So I don't know what would happen there or how that happened. Something got lost in the mail, maybe. But the school district, and if I can find that story, we'll cover the school district's response to that. Yellow is not bad at all if you look at exactly what the criteria were that the state is looking at. In fact, it is average. In fact, it is no higher than 70% of the state's objectives, but that's not bad, according to our local educational people. Interestingly, the city council, tensions were high. I always love these high-tension debates. The city council meeting on August 12th, Mayor Jack O'Reilly and council members and residents discussed their take on a proposal to place a 180-day moratorium on smoking facilities in the city. And Council President Susan DeBaja said it was felt that the city should take no future action on any new smoking facilities. Now, primarily they're talking about hookah lounges, but maybe cigar bars too. And this, you know, what is 180 days? If you haven't checked, folks, that's half a year. That's 6 months. And what are they waiting for? They're going to study. City officials are going to study smoking facilities and their place in and effect on the city. So it's according to the city council and the mayor at this point, they say we want to look at the overall pattern of businesses. You should have a variety of businesses to have a vibrant community, and I agree with that. I always felt there was too many, Italian restaurants, and there's some great Italian restaurants here, but too many Italian restaurants, and too many sports bars. But there's a lot of sports fans, so maybe it worked out. But then we got cigar bars. And
martini bars.
And the last martini bar, I think, is closed. That was part of Kernan's, and that's gone now because Kernan's is gone. Maybe it'll come back, but maybe it's not a trend anymore to drink martinis. I'm not sure what was the original reason. Nonetheless, everybody in the council favored it, except one person, I think, voted against it. Councilman Michael Cerini was the most vocal. He says, I have no problems with the study. Don't believe this is the appropriate method at this time. So, you know, if more businesses are allowed to come in and begin of a certain type, and I'm not saying smoking bars or whatever, then what's the consequence? If you find out that it's not part of a master plan that you'd prefer for community development, or it's unhealthy, then you can't. Can you really get them out?
Can you get a push? Yeah.
Can you push them out? I mean, they either bought the land or they're under a lease. That gets really sticky, I think, after the fact, legally. So I have a feeling that this moratorium is not a bad idea. Although I thought the city had some sort of plan in the first place as to, you know, what number of businesses of certain types that they would prefer, and what should be incorporated. I'm just looking to the end of this. A representative, this article goes on for quite a while, and that's good. I love in-depth articles. So everybody on the council, like Tefalski and others, are quoted in the story. We can't go over all of it. Deborah Walling, of course, the city attorney, told people about the legal consequences, some of which I alluded to. And the mayor, in fact, said that there's a smoking facility limit statewide of 330, and 15 of them are in Dearborn. Wow. So you can't have more than 315 smoking facilities in the state of Michigan. Wow. And so why would the state do that, first of all? Well, it may be health issues. I'm just going to jump down to a place here. We have the president of the Arab and Middle East Resources Center in Dearborn. His name is Abed Alawnea, A-L-A-W-N-E-A-H. Alawnea, perhaps. And he's talking about the harm that smoking facilities have on a city. He said his organization works to reduce substance abuse within the Arab American community, and the number one contribution to the problem is access and availability. He said 50% of the youth are smoking, including via hookah, according to data. He says we really need to take care of this problem. So it's a health concern, and you know, you don't want people to come down with cancer, or you know, they can't go out and exercise before they start choking and coughing. It's very important to be able to breathe cleanly, even in our polluted air in this area. And so all that smoking doesn't help, even though when you're young it seems cool and you don't seem to notice the health problems for a few years perhaps. So the city does have a place in regulating this and also reviewing their overall business plan. And, majority said, now's the time to do it. Michael Cerini was the person saying he likes the idea, but he doesn't like the ban at this time. So that was the big hot issue at City Council on August 12th. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Okay. Interestingly, why did it take until now, this is 10 days later, to get in the paper?
That's interesting.
I mean, if this is the top story for the console, for the month, why wouldn't it be in the press and guide earlier? So, well, it takes time to write it. But in the olden days, reporters who were full-time, they would have it written by the next day into the paper. And press and guide puts out two editions a week, so it should have been in maybe a week ago Sunday, for Pete's sake. But
well, we might give them a little bit of leeway because of the flooding and et cetera.
Right. And I do commend the Press and Guide that a few of these stories on education and the city council, the part-time people that are working for you right now, you're allowing them to put in very complete stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, long stories, much longer than a typical little blurb on the front page. All the material seems to be going in once they write it up. And so thank you for doing that. That's the least we can do. Also this week in Press and Guide Wednesday, we have news, not just soft news. You know, I don't mind human interest news and, you know, cute kitten videos, but, you know, a newspaper on the front page shouldn't be talking about that. But, of course, bringing up kittens, what's on the front page also of the Press Guide from Wednesday? Our animal shelter, the great and wonderful Dearborn Animal Shelter, and I mean that sincerely, is dealing with a flood of its own, it says here cleverly, kittens. Mm. Despite a successful adopt-a-thon over the weekend, there are still more animals in need of a forever home, according to Sandy Bolton, who's been a guest on this show many times, Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter spokeswoman. There are new kittens every day, she says. Maybe because the houses are flooded and the cats have no place to go to the litter box anymore downstairs.
They need to find a new litter box.
They're either just shoving them out the door with the damaged stuff, or that wouldn't be nice, or bring them to the shelter because they said we don't have room for them anymore.
Yeah, we don't have good space for them now.
Yeah, we're not going to put the litter box upstairs, for gosh sakes. Let me tell you, folks, you know, there is deodorized litter boxes and litter trays now. So if you didn't know that, it's been going on for like 20 years. But I have one, oh, my God, in my bedroom. I have a two-story home, and my cat is 13 years old. And so for its convenience, I have a litter box in my bedroom. It doesn't smell, folks. No odor at all. I scoop it every day or two. Still, he's trained. He goes down to the big one in the basement for the big moments. But if he's sleeping upstairs in the bedroom with me or upstairs and he has to do something, he knows he has that convenience there. But I'm just saying, just because your basement is flooded, you don't have to get rid of your pet because of the smell or something. That'd be rather sad. Anyway, so check them out. In an effort to find all these kittens' homes, through August 23rd, that's tomorrow, those 6 months and younger, and a lot of people like to start with a kitten, they're easier to train. Can you ever train a cat?
Difficult to train a cat.
Yeah, but they're bond with you a little better if they're starting with you young, I think, you know, knowing your home routine. So they'll only be $35 to adopt, and of course they come with shots and, you know, everything you need, all the information. Normally that fee is $55. So through tomorrow, at the very least, maybe you want to get a kitten and help the flood of kittens out at the Dearborn Animal Shelter. Okay, let me just spin through the paper here. Here it is. Well, here it is. As I said, even in Press Guide, on page A3, it's the counterbalance to the story on the front page, even though on the front page it doesn't have a reference to this, even though it should, I think. Oh, it says sea-related story. Yeah, when on page 3A, the story about the yellow report card from the state of Michigan, on 3A, it says at the end of it about Dearborn Public Schools, sea-related story. But they don't say it's right above us on the same page. Look up. You know, there it is. Esso Ford moves off a priority list. So our Edsel Ford High School is not on the problem list, if you will, the priority list, but must keep it. Changes it made last year after it was ranked as one of Michigan's poorest performing schools, based on their criteria, of course, the state's criteria, including having an extra hour of class on most days. But if you read on later, here's the follow-up, and apparently also, as it says here, Dearborn School Superintendent Brian Winston will soon be sending home a letter to parents with the district's response to the state report cards. So you'll see his words specifically if you're a parent. I may not get it because I don't have kids in the public schools, but I usually what Winston does is also send that information to the newspapers, mm-hmm. so that they publish it as an op-ed editorial, and just we get to see his words. But let's see, who's the McBroom person? someone speaking here. It says, it's difficult for us at the district level, but we keep excruciating records on everything that happens. And they say, what's difficult to explain to parents and teachers and students is that these scores are only partial indicators. Only one way to glimpse what schools do. That's the state rankings. So it's only one way. So hopefully we'll have Brian Whiston back here on the show sometime in the fall. We're busy getting our candidate list of interviews scheduled. You know, big election coming up in November. So that's what we're going to try to focus on. But we will get Brian Whiston and others back, of course. Hey, they've got a millage, I think, coming up again for renewal in the fall. I'm not sure about that.
I'm not sure either.
Well, we'll get Dave Musselman, their spokesperson, or Whiston back to give their side of the story, too, on that. We can't do endorsements here at WHFR. That's okay. We can try to get the information out, though.
Just to illuminate, Jay, Kathleen McBroom is Dearborn's Director of Compensatory Education and School Improvement.
Yep. So she should know something about that topic. Okay. Very good. Always great editorials, op-ed page, Dearborn Press and Guide this week with Craig Ferrand. It's a rather long story, but he talks about we're still feeling the unintended consequences 20 years later. So he's talking about especially what happened politically 20 years ago, and that was so-called Proposal A. And under 1994's Proposal A, the legislature shifted the burden of public education financing from property taxes to an increased state sales tax. And in 95, lawmakers allowed the formation of public schools, public school academies, also called charter schools. And third, that same act also allowed students to attend schools outside their home district under a new schools of choice provision. And just to sum up his opinion, and I don't want to do it unfairly, because summations are always a little bit unfair, because the details always speak louder, I think, than the generalization. Nonetheless, he says, neither choice nor charter schools provides transportation to their distinct locales, and all of these three situations have not really helped education in Michigan. Of course, there's a funding issue always. How much is the legislature willing to take from their income to give to the schools? Okay, and again, all the school districts will tell you they have less money now than they had 3 years ago coming from the state for education. Other people will say, no, they got more. Governor gave them an increase. Well, it depends on what numbers you're looking at. They're operating a school district has a lot of different costs, and there have been increases in some areas. I thought it was interesting that some of the increase that Governor Snyder and the legislature have done this last year to schools, it's for things they needed to fund under law anyway in terms of pensions. They were legally bound to do that anyway. And they hadn't been doing it. No, they're not required to. I mean, they're supposed to. They promised to, but they're not required by anybody because they are the government, right? Well, they finally kicked some more money into the pensions, which they were supposed to do anyway, even though they've cut the pensions to the teachers. But they kicked some more money in, and they called that the increase to schools. But what about the money to operate the schools, too? Well, again, all the superintendents of all the school districts in Michigan will tell you they have less money now than they had in 2008, period. So who are you going to believe? Politicians? Or, especially in an election year, or are you going to believe the people that actually run these districts on behalf of the people that elected them? I think the answer is clear. So read Craig Ferrand's complete op-ed. It's, again, wonderful that he goes on in such detail. So you can choose what you think is right, what you think is fair. You've got his reasons there, which you can individually agree with. You say, yes, he made an argument of a number of good facts, or you can disagree with all of them if you want to, but you get a chance to make your mind up. You can only do that with newspapers, by the way. Not so much with radio. I can challenge you to go elsewhere to get the news, in print especially, and then print will allow you to think about over and over what you're reading and make some decisions. Commentary. This is anti-Snyder, but it's in your press and guide. It's an op-ed from Jeff Payne, who's local news editor, not here, but of the Macomb Daily. Okay. Well, he says Governor Snyder has made some sort of, what do they call it, publicity appearances after the flooding in Michigan. But he didn't do very much, nor has the legislature done anything for this disaster. As we reported last week, of course, many mayors, including Mayor O'Reilly, officially issued a proclamation of an emergency in their areas so that they could receive federal and state funding if the federal government or the state government wants to give them any money.
If they approve it.
That's the hook. Yep. Well, they recognize it, but if they approve any money, if they want to send money or troops or whatever it might take, then they will. Nonetheless, you can read that for yourself, but, you know, GOP political consultant told political commentator that Snyder's appearance in the Upper Peninsula for an aerial tour of the disaster up there, and it gave a few thoughts from an airport in Waterford, miles away from the epicenter of the impact. The GOP political consultant, John Truscott, said it showed leadership. The next day, Snyder did his best imitation of aloof millionaire trying to be one of us when he told WJR radio host Frank Beckman, quote, "We have a vacation place, and we had a limb come down on the roof and had water running through the whole place. Those experiences are not pleasant ones, and they had to take some trees down." That's my imitation of Governor Snyder. One tough nerd. Okay. But he lives in Ann Arbor. And I don't know where his vacation home is. Probably beautiful Traverse City or some other area around there. Petoskey. nonetheless. And that same day, he did issue a declaration of disaster and a brief release, the first step toward getting help from Washington, D.C. But this only took a day to do, but it took 3-4 days for him to do it. And so you can read Jeff Payne's comments about that and figure out whether or not your state government has responded quickly enough. Already. Of course, the photo op is also in the paper. It shows Debbie Dingell helping Governor Rick Snyder and others dispose of trash downriver. And Rick Snyder, with his gloves on and his jeans, and he's wearing a black t-shirt like I am right now. Wow, you got a good taste, Rick. He's helping people clean up portions of Southgate. Would you wear a black t-shirt if you're cleaning up trash? That's going to get soiled quick. That wouldn't be good for a photo op. I mean, just saying. At least it's neat.
I guess you would look like you were doing more if you wore a lighter colored t-shirt.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying. I don't know. But I'm just saying that those shots were not taken the day after. And obviously, they didn't work all day long on that.
No.
They worked just long enough for the photographers to get a few shots, and then they left.
Sure.
I mean, after all, you know. You can't expect more of a politician. They got other things to do. They got their vacation homes to be concerned about. Sure. You know. I'm making a little fun here, but you know, there's always those photo ops, and everybody does them, and they're always doing them late. They never do them right away. I know Obama was criticized. He didn't fly to the Mexican border, Mexican American border, when the kids started coming over en masse from Mexico.
No.
As refugees. But other people from the government were there. Does the president, or the governor for that matter, have to have a photo op everywhere?
Can't be everywhere.
Get the issue resolved.
Get the problem taken
care of. I
don't care
if I see them physically there. Are they really making a difference in their job? Sure. I said, well, it's nice that they're helping. Yes, it is, but they're only helping for a few minutes for the sake of the photo op, you know. Why don't they work on getting a law or finding new money somewhere or getting the infrastructure worked out for the next 20 years? Oh, and by the way, I heard this fact, and it's a fact. Some local group that knows about highway construction costs, you know, we've said on the show about infrastructure and about, well, we quoted Governor Snyder, that to just repair the roads and bridges we have in Michigan now, just to repair them and keep them maintained, we will have to kickstart $1.2 billion a year for the next 10 years. Hmm. Well, that was a couple years ago when he said that. Hmm. Apparently, costs have gone up. That highway construction analysts are now saying, because the roads are in worse shape, the holes are getting bigger, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so some roads can't be patched now. They got to be completely redone. That's happening. And some bridges can't be fixed and repaired. They've got to be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Get the idea, right? It's going to be $2.2 billion that the state's going to have to put out for 10 years just to redo, maintain what we've got. So forget about new roads or new highways or paving over some gravel roads somewhere. That's not going to happen. Where are we going to get the money? Or do we have to just give up on roads and choose some other kind of transportation? Like, I don't know, get helicopters for everybody or something?
Cars that fly.
Can some drone come over from Amazon and just grab my shoulders and take me to work? Just saying, that would be cool, but
wouldn't that be fun?
You know, probably too heavy for a drone, but that would take a small helicopter or some sort to pick me up. But nonetheless, okay. So just thinking here, what do you think? It is. Oh my gosh, it's 18 minutes to the end of the hour, and we're still talking about stuff in general. Do you have stories there, John? You'd like to kick in
well,
at this point?
I would like to. Yes, I would like to speak about the trip that I made yesterday to the Freedom Center. I made a trip to the Freedom Center at Detroit Metro Airport and had an interview with Charlotte Tripp, who was the Freedom Center director. And this is a service that's been going on now for almost 3 years to veterans and their families coming in on from trips that they've been overseas or domestic. To help, to either give them refreshments or rest. And the mission is to serve those who serve us. It's 1,100 square feet. It's open 7 days a week, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. And they'll also, if folks need to sleep overnight, there are bunk beds to sleep overnight.
Location again?
Is Detroit Metro Airport.
Okay. And so are there signs?
And there's signs. It's at gate 43 at Detroit Metro Airport. They convinced the airport authority that they needed a center after 2,100 people came in the first 4 weeks that it was opened.
Wow. So a wide range of services for veterans returning.
And their families, yeah. Mm-hmm. 170 people a day are going there now, and up to 5,000 people a month.
We hope to get a full interview or a longer interview with Ms. Tripp in the future. And John has attended several of their meetings, and he did visit, as I said. You mentioned to me that when you visited, though, I guess at the airport, you had to go through a gate?
Well, yes, we had to go through the normal security that anybody does to go through into the airport. Had to take your shoes
because
off.
Because you said they're at gate 43, so they're is that to help grab veterans that arrive at the airport by plane somehow?
Yes.
Is that why it's out there? It must be, because they're already
coming through and
they can just go there first.
And they're also taking off, and they're coming to see their loved ones take off.
You shouldn't be carrying your concealed weapon trying to go through there.
Not a good idea. No.
Okay. But remember, you have to take off your shoes, probably too, folks. So.
And there's volunteers in the center to help ask any questions or bring help to bring refreshments to the folks as well.
You know. The Freedom Center, do they have a website? Did you write that down?
They do.
We'll give it to you right now, and then we'll move on.
Yes, the Freedom Center is www.mifreedomcenter.org.
Here is enough. mifreedomcenter.org, folks. So, and they don't have to be recently returned vets. Could it be vets from Vietnam?
It could be any vet at all. And also, there's been instances of families for example, a young girl was trying to travel through and couldn't make her connection, and her father was a vet, and he called the center and said, listen, I need my daughter to have some shelter tonight.
So they're open to just any questions or advice that veterans might need or help they might need. If they can't help directly, I bet they'll know who can take care of it.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yes. Freedom Center. That's mifreedomcenter.org. A great service for veterans here in the Detroit area based at Metro Airport.
Yep.
Okay. Looking here, I do have, and in the time remaining, probably can't get it in. As I promised a couple weeks ago, we did interview Democratic governor candidate Mark Schauer. He's the He's not the incumbent, okay, folks? And here at WHFR Journal, we try to not interview incumbents during election time. Why? Because the incumbent, they've already got their name out there. If you don't know how good or bad they are already, where you been? You know, so we don't need to spend the time on that. Also, they almost always have more money to do ads on radio and TV than the challenger. Mark Schauer is the challenger, okay? Right now he's running, according to all polls, neck and neck with Governor Snyder. So we had a very brief interview, 8 minutes, at Dearborn Homecoming, because he was there and Governor Snyder was not this year. So I'd like to rerun that for you sometime. And it does have some value. He has some specific comments about a couple of issues, but it looks like we won't get time to toss it in there today. Let's take a look now at the Dearborn Times Herald, and we'll go on with see how many more stories we get. I have three top stories also from the Press and Guide that I have to briefly mention about Dearborn, and we'll definitely get to that. Dearborn Heights clerk, John, you want to mention about Mr. Prusiewicz?
Mr. Prusiewicz, yes. We mentioned before that there was a question whether he resigned or not, and that was legally discovered that he is the current clerk, and the absentee ballots have been counted.
Yep, yep. Again, the Michigan Election Commission found nothing inappropriate, nothing wrong with the way he has done his office. Some people were upset. They still say over there that a couple people that made absentee ballots never or requested absentee ballots through the mail, that they never got the ballots sent to them. But I'm not sure how that can be proven if the city clerk's office doesn't have that application, or if they have the application and it wasn't signed, I don't see that they have a legal reason to send it. There's some dispute on that still, and they say, well, somebody's going to sue because he did resign. The lawyer of the city of Dearborn Heights looked at the city charter, and it says the council must officially accept the resignation at a meeting, which they've not done. What they did was officially receive, noted, and filed his letter of resignation. So according to the letter of the law, they didn't accept the resignation. And you'd say, well, same difference. I'm sorry, a lawyer would say it either they accepted the resignation or they didn't. And in this case, they did not accept it. They just received it, noted it, and filed it. So for your non-lawyers out there, I know it sounds like the same thing, but it isn't. Okay? Legally, the resolution had to say that they accepted the resignation. So there. All right. Of course, I think we mentioned this before, mentioned it briefly, Crestwood School District approved a settlement agreement with the Civil Rights Division, the U.S. Department of Justice, concerning the Education of English Language Learner Program. The challenge, and they're not saying they did anything wrong, but the challenge was that they didn't have enough teachers and communication there with students who needed English language assistance. And they're changing. They're going to make changes and make sure that they do have properly qualified teachers and do a comprehensive inventory of instructional materials and so on and so forth. So the community said, you're not being fair. And the challenge, they decided not to continue it legally. They decided to just make the changes. And so that seems to be going okay in Dearborn Heights. Okay, just thumbing through the pages. HFC Planetarium hosts Fall Star Talks, and it's, of course, our own WHFR star.
Susan McGraw.
Susan McGraw, our general manager also. She is the academic coordinator for journalism and telecommunication within the communications division on campus, but she's our general manager. And she, in a recorded version of Susan McGraw, will again be presenting The Road Not Taken, a Fall Star Talk. She's going to be doing the narration of the presentation, and we'll be mentioning probably in a pre-recorded announcement going throughout the semester. These are taking place at Henry Ford College at the Hammond Planetarium in room S100 of the Science Center from September 2nd through December 13th. And there's a variety of days and times during the week and on weekends, some Sundays, some Saturdays, and it varies. So you'll need to take a look at some more information. Right now, I can tell you, if you've got your pen handy, if you're listening to the podcast as we run this, Stephen Murrell, M-U-R-R-E-L-L, here at Henry Ford College. You can call him for information at 313-317-1536. Some more information about the Hammond Planetarium, Road Not Taken shows, which, guess what, are free at HFC. Okay? Stephen Murrell, 313-317-1536. Susan, of course, besides being with WHFR since 1997, she also has had a 10-year career in radio broadcasting before that. So, has she got a voice? Yeah.
Yes, she does.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a quick little thing, Jay.
Yeah.
This Sunday, we're going to have our barbershop quartet singing at the Concert on the Commons on Grosse Isle, and it's called Right on Cue, and it's 7 to 8 on this Sunday, August 24th, the second to last concert of the series. The last concert is going to be Benny of Benny and the Jets.
Okay, and the venue again is?
Is called Concert on the Commons.
Yeah, and where?
On Grosse Isle at the gazebo at the corner of Macomb and Meridian.
Okay. Yeah, if you haven't been down at Grosse Isle for a while, folks, do a little field trip. I think of the other island, too, Belle Isle, which is under state management now as a park. State police are there, and everything is running fine, and they're making a lot of changes for sort of a weekend trip for the family. Anybody doing that anymore on the weekends, doing a little family trip in the car all together at the same time? Oh, my gosh. Grosse Isle has a lot of fun things going on there.
Lots of great things, you bet.
By the way, years ago, is there a gardens there? I mean, a place that sells flowers and plants, but it's actually so huge. They have rows and rows of beautiful flowers.
We have a place called Westcroft Gardens.
That's it, yeah.
And it's a greenhouse as well as they have a farmer's market.
You can actually visit it as if it was a sort of an arboretum and walk through the areas. It's not just a bunch of potted plants sitting up in one place, but you can walk through and enjoy the sort of the gardens.
And there's a wooded area that people can travel through. Right. In the fall, there's bonfires and that type of program.
Yeah. So Westcroft Gardens, a lot of things going on in Grosse Isle, and of course that's where John lives, and I know they can't quite hear our broadcast in Grosse Isle, can they?
Not yet.
Not quite. Got to get some better antennas down there.
Sometimes on a rainy day, you can catch some of them.
Get on the internet, Grosse Isle.
Okay.
Three big stories here in the last 5 minutes. First of all, we mentioned the city council in Dearborn. Just recently, they did allocate $1 million. August 20th. That's 2 days ago. Just got into the pressandguide.com this morning. $1 million has been dedicated by the Dearborn City Council so that contractors, heavy equipment, and city personnel can continue helping residents recover from the aftermath of the record-breaking August 11th storm. More than 20 extra crews from the city and the trash contractor are working 10 to 12-hour days to pick up unprecedented amounts of water and sewage-soaked materials at the curbside. I know in my neighborhood, there's still plenty of stuff piled up. It's been there for, again, since the 11th or 12th. So they're coming, folks. If you wondered, they put out the extra money for the extra pickups, and altogether more than Mayor O'Reilly said 850 tons, or if you'd prefer 1.7 million pounds, has been collected by August 20th.
Wow.
But they got more to go. So the collection will continue through the end of August and possibly beyond. FYI, it won't all occur on regular trash days. Crews are moving through the city as quickly and safely as possible, but are not able to get all bulk material from one area in a single trash day. So, anyway, they're getting there. Okay, they're aware of it. City has put out extra money. There's some details about what to put there, which we can't give completely here, but you can go to cityofdearborn.org or call up city offices and get the information that you need. Remember, hazardous waste materials are not allowed. That includes paint cans, pesticide, many household cleaning supplies, and electronics. Don't start putting out. It's not a trash amnesty day, and it's not a hazardous waste day. So, okay. And but you were asked to keep your parked vehicles off the street so that heavy machinery can have access to the bulk materials at the curb for removal. So if you got a lot of stuff piled up on your curb, don't park your car next to it,
right.
Okay? Because maybe accidentally, if they try to move the stuff, it'll all fall on your car too. So you don't want that. So definitely, if it's your house, it's got the trash in front of it, you don't park your car there. There's no doubt about that. But of course, on a public service day when they normally pick up their trash, you can't have your car there anyway. Point number two, about from the city. Let's stay with the scavenging. Curbside scavenging is now prohibited, and this just happened this week also, updated on August 21st. So it's now a misdemeanor crime for people to remove items set out at curb for trash pickup. So that's whether it's the basement trash or whether it's the regular trash, just because, well, there's health and safety reasons. They say we can't have people looking through trash bags and searching through piles of materials that are sometimes 5 feet high. We really can't tell what's in the bags. We know that materials are damaged from the flood, most likely contaminated with sewage. It's just not safe, says Mayor O'Reilly. So no one can go through there. You say, well, I like that furniture. I think I can, you know, repair it or save it, and I'm going to pick that up from my basement, which hasn't flooded. No. The punishment is up to a $500 fine and 93 days in jail. And you can call the Dearborn Police if you see people doing this. It's for their own health and safety at the non-emergency number of 313-943-2241. Non-emergency police number. And this ordinance will expire in 61 days. Again, why isn't just 60? It's the magic of 61. There's got to be a reason for that. Okay, and I think it was started on yesterday, August 21st. So 3 months. Just think 3 months. 1 month is September, another month October. Oh, it's almost all the way to Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, 2 months. Not 3 months. 60 is 2 months. So it's towards the end of October. Don't go through the trash. Don't let anybody else go through the trash at all. It may not be safe or healthy.
And what's that number again, Jay?
Yeah, the non-emergency number in Dearborn for the Dearborn Police is 943-2241.
Okay.
Don't use 911, folks. That'll just mess up things and take away from the coverage of real emergencies. Okay. And last but not least, the center here, also known as the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, basically at Greenfield and Michigan Avenue. It's going to be closed August 25th through September 1st for the facility's annual maintenance week. So the pools are going to close. Oh, they already closed today at noon. And it's what they do every year. So they're going to be cleaning, reconditioning, refurbishing, refinishing floors, cleaning carpeting. And it's just what they do. So, of course, the kids are still out of school for a while. Probably the last chance to go to parks or pools somewhere, but our center is going to be completely closed through September 1st. Okay? All right. So it is WHFR Dearborn you're listening to, the station making waves, Highway 61 with Joanne Kay. We'll be starting in just a few moments. We're going to be continuing here. I didn't make a comment about Ferguson, Missouri last week. Let's put Jim Hightower on. I know our podcast will cut off in about a minute or so. But I think, Joanne's on her way in. We'll say goodbye now for the Journal. And Highway 61, the best in blues, would be 2 to 6. And we're just going to close with this commentary from Jim Hightower. Thank you for listening, and tune back in again next week.
The story exploding out of Ferguson, Missouri, is doubly infuriating. First, there is the obvious outrage of yet another unarmed black teenager, Michael Brown, being stopped by one of the town's white police officers as he was walking to his grandmother's house. A scuffle ensued, and Brown was shot to death by the officer. He was then left lying in the street for hours, during which time